Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. This week, we've got an amazing story from one man who spent his life savings to launch a local news startup. Oliver Rowan Williams and his co-founder invested around £160,000 together to launch Ipswich.co.uk this week. Well, it was supposed to be next week, but the publication launched early because local rivals at NewsQuest were tipped off. Coming up, he tells us why he had to fast-track that launch date and shares his vision for a sustainable local news model. Forget cookies, ads or paywalls, Ipswich.co.uk is launching with an unproven model, but Oliver is quietly confident it will support high-quality community journalism. The UK local news sector is crying out for innovators and trailblazers, and here is one of them at long last. Don't go anywhere. Ollie, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. Thank you ever so much for coming onto our show.
Yeah, no, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You've got a hell of a story to share with us today about how you put your life savings into launching a local news startup where you are in Ipswich, together with a few co-investors of yours. Take it away. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, sure. So the kind of short version of the story is around 6 months ago, I sold my car in order to acquire Ipswich.co.uk and Ipswichtown.co.uk for a kind of a not unsubstantial amount of money, much to my sort of wife's disgust. I then kind of deposited what was left of our savings, which is around £45,000, into a business account. And then basically proceeded to wind down my media advisory and consulting business so that I could focus all of my attention on building and launching a local newsroom in my hometown, in probably some of the toughest market conditions our industry has ever faced, and without a penny of income from other sources. So that was kind of me, that's kind of my side of the story. One of my good friends, a guy called Ash Reed, he then came on board and invested £90,000, having just exited his home interest publishing business. And he then joined our advisory board along with Lorna Willis, another close friend, and also the former CEO of Archant. And she oversaw the turnaround of Archant before it was subsequently sold to NewsQuest a couple of years ago.
There's a million questions that come to mind right now, but let's start with the obvious one, which is why? What happened in your life that made you decide, okay, I'm going to just put everything into a local news venture? What was the thinking?
Yeah, so I started life in local media at Archant, funnily enough, about 15 years ago. And I'd say within my first week in that job, I knew that that was the industry that I would kind of spend like the best part of my career in, despite all of its flaws and challenges. I absolutely love working in media. Like the pace of change, the enormity of the challenges, I've always seen that as an appeal. Like the size of the opportunity, if you can find solutions to those challenges, the impact that you can have. Like in my opinion, there's kind of no more exciting industry to work in. And over the kind of the sort of following kind of months and years, I basically made like a commitment to myself that I would focus on becoming a part of the solution rather than like just another sort of like vocal advocate of all of the problems. Like so much energy in media is consumed like lobbying, complaining, finger pointing, like the platforms, the BBC, government spending on advertising, like third party cookies, ad tech. Like it's really rare to hear big local media companies take ownership and accountability for the problems that they face. And my view has always been that rather than sort of becoming a part of that sort of brigade, actually committing to doing something about it, putting my money where my mouth is and doing everything I can to try and find a sustainable model for local journalism where I live. And yeah, that's kind of where it all began.
That is just remarkable to hear. Just the whole concept of I want to be the change that I want to see, you know?
Yeah, like it's easy, right? Like it's easy to kind of get caught up in like in the frustrations and challenges of an industry that's kind of massively important to society, but probably like undervalued. But I've always been like a massive believer in kind of like act then talk, like don't just kind of sort of get frustrated by it, actually do something about it. And that was very much the premise when sort of embarking on this.
and your wife tried to talk you out of it?
So, yes and no. She's always been very, very supportive of me kind of scratching my sort of local media company itch. I think that, speaking candidly, she'd probably have rather that I wasn't quite sort of so all in on the manner in which I went about it, which is probably the polite way of saying the actual conversation. But yeah, no, she's incredibly supportive. I'm very lucky, and I'd imagine few people would probably tolerate the level of risk and commitment to a fairly lofty ambition.
I mean, we're having a joke here, but I mean, I feel like there's a serious question here, which is that, I mean, do you feel like it's an enormous risk, or do you actually feel like, if done right, local news can be a really worthwhile investment?
Yeah, I guess it's two parts to that. Like, the first is, like, yes, like, I categorically believe that there is out there somewhere a sustainable profit model for local journalism. Like, so that's kind of like point number one. I wouldn't be doing this and taking that level of risk if I didn't kind of firmly believe that. The kind of flip side to that is that it is obviously like an incredibly challenging market, and Ipswich itself isn't like an appealing market to try and find a sustainable model for local journalism in. Like, it's saturated with large kind of well-backed corporate competitors in ILIF and NewsQuest. It's a relatively small, like, rural town of 140,000 people, and it's not overly affluent. It's not like a Cambridge, like, or a Manchester, or kind of various places in like Sussex. It's a really tough market to find like a profitable model for local journalism in. So look, like, yeah, like, there is obviously very real risks. Like, I don't have any kind of like generational wealth. Like, there is no backup plan in place other than sort of going back to sort of my career in corporate media and tech. But yeah, look, I wouldn't be doing it if I wasn't kind of confident that somewhere there was a profitable, sustainable business.
So you raised something really interesting there, because one of the leading lights, I suppose, in local media innovation in the UK is the Mill Media Group. I'm not sure if you've heard of them, but they're a Substack based news publication. The first one was in Manchester, and as they've expanded, they've typically focused on metropolitan areas, Sheffield, Liverpool, more recently Glasgow, Birmingham. So, to your mind, what would you have to do differently in Ipswich compared to a local news venture in one of these more major cities? What are the different things that you might have to consider?
Yeah, so look, like, Yoshi and the guys at Mill Media, I think, have done like an incredible job. Like, I've obviously followed their journey super closely from day one. They produce incredible content. Like, I'd love it if at some point in the near future we were able to produce content of a similar ilk. But I would say that their journalism is for the 10%, not the 90%. Like, that only works in like metropolitan cities and larger, more affluent towns. Like, their model, I don't think, would work in Ipswich. Like, I don't think there's enough people that would value that type of journalism enough to pay enough money at enough scale for it to, on its own, create a sustainable business. So in terms of what we're doing, we're focusing on the 90%. Like, we are going to do good quality, like, news reporting in the area, covering public interest stories like courts, local government elected leaders, local MPs, etc., etc. And we're going to focus on the business model of journalism first and figure out the kind of editorial piece as we go, as opposed to kind of what the Mill Media and what most independent publishers did, which was kind of figure out the editorial piece first and then figure out how they're going to make it a sustainable, profitable business in the future.
So what does that look like in practical terms, in terms of appealing to the 90% rather than the 10?
So when I talk about like our product, I think about our product through kind of three lenses. There's the journalism, there's the products that we publish that journalism on, and then there's kind of how we use those products to help local businesses thrive. And that's the key part. And kind of, I guess, where I sort of lean on my sort of commercial background to kind of use that as a starting point. If I kind of start with the kind of journalism side, initially it's just me. So my focus is on getting the basics right. And that means kind of reliable coverage on public interest stories around the council. So like one example is we have the Town Deal Fund in Ipswich, which is effectively a £25 million package from government to start kind of rebuilding key infrastructure and projects around Ipswich. I think we started with around 11 projects, and quite quickly a number of those projects have already been killed because they've been viewed as not feasible. And it looks like we're going to end up in a position where we actually struggle to spend money given to us by government to make Ipswich Town a better place to kind of live and work. So that's kind of one area that we'll kind of really hone in on. And all of our journalism will focus on outcomes. So I kind of position our journalism as purposeful local journalism that respects your time and attention, and purpose is the key word. So I want every piece of content we produce to have a purpose and help drive towards positive outcomes in the town. So kind of informing readers on kind of what the town deal is and what's happening is just one element. But the bigger element is actually getting out there in the community and facilitating change and amplifying voices and good work that other organisations do in the community to actually impact those decisions, to lobby council, to find other ways and means and projects that the public perceive as valuable rather than just the council and a small number of organisations.
Yeah, I like from that answer, you know, the follow through, the emphasis on more maybe positive community stories. But, you know, you touched before on the existing competition in the area from, I think you said, NewsQuest and ILIF, wasn't it? I'm sure they would say that their journalism has purpose too. So my question to you is, what are you doing different to the existing establishment in Ipswich? Or what do you intend on doing differently, rather? Because obviously launches to come still.
Yeah, good question. So that's where the kind of the product and the business model comes in. NewsQuest in particular get a really hard time about the quality of journalism. But look, I actually think they do produce some really good journalism. Like, don't get me wrong, there is a lot of dross that ends up on the website for various reasons. But they do fundamentally produce good journalism. That good journalism gets lost on a horrendous like reader experience. And I think that most people locally and even across the country now associate a bad news website with bad journalism. And I think they're two very separate things, but they kind of get merged into one. So our product, our platform, like, is massively important. Like, you will not find, in my opinion, and obviously I'm horribly biased, but in my view, you won't find a nicer kind of local news reading experience than you will on Ipswich.co.uk. Like, there's no ads, there's no Taboola or Outbrain feeds kind of populating sites with kind of sensationalist clickbait. Like, there is quite literally zero display advertising. There are no pop-ups like trying to drive you into their kind of conversion funnels. There's no paywall. A lot of the frustrations that come from local people is that there's a number of barriers to accessing content that they want to read. That is sometimes in the form of overly aggressive advertising. Sometimes it is now kind of data walls or paywalls that have been kind of erected. So all of those frustrations we're removing. And that's a big part of our kind of sort of differentiation at launch.
This is probably a good chance to mention that Ipswich.co.uk's launch didn't exactly go as planned. Oliver intended soft launching the site on the 29th of July with a public launch on the 5th of August. Only it turned out that NewsQuest, the established local news group, were tipped off about the arrival of Ipswich.co.uk, forcing Oliver to launch a week early. All of this happened after our initial interview, so I followed up with Oliver afterwards, and here's what he had to say.
The original plan, like you said, was to kind of hard launch or publicly launch on the 5th of August. And then the intention was to have what we'd kind of called like a soft launch this week. And the purpose of that was essentially to have a 1 week kind of trial period where I could find my feet. I could invite press officers to preview the site and get us on the distribution lists. And to invite around 200 of our early access readers who signed up to an early access waiting list and give them the opportunity to provide some feedback before we kind of went live in earnest on the 5th of August.
And so what happened?
Yeah, so there was always a chance that this could have happened. But shortly after sending out the email to our kind of waiting list, I got a nudge from a former colleague and friend who works at NewsQuest just to let me know that it was kind of now common knowledge in kind of NewsQuest HQ that Ipswich.co.uk was a thing. So yeah, it was kind of one of those things that we knew there was always a chance that could happen. We did previously have NewsQuest emails, including Henry, the CEO of NewsQuest, on our waiting list. Those emails were obviously removed prior to sending out.
the email to our waiting list. But yeah, look, it was one of those things. It was always possible, and it probably just happened a little bit quicker than we envisaged.
So you didn't want them to catch wind of this?
Yeah, look, from a purely personal perspective, I would have loved to have had a whole week of being editor, of going through sort of the processes that I'd put in place and stress testing everything and making sure that it was all kind of smooth and plain sailing before we kind of hit the ground running. But yeah, look, it was one of those things. It happened, and it's no biggie.
It's no biggie. Okay, I mean, how are you feeling today, having, you know, been rushed into kind of putting this public a week early?
Yeah, mixed of emotions. So it's been exciting in the fact that this has obviously sort of been a decade of ideas and thinking in the making, and it's obviously super exciting to actually have it out there in the public domain and everything else that kind of comes with that. It's obviously nerve-wracking from the perspective that we are, well, day one into a new local news brand, and I've got sort of a large established kind of competitor sort of hot on our heels. But yeah, look, it's one of those things.
Yes, one of those things. But why did them finding out change up the time frame and the timeline here? Why did you feel so compelled to go a week early because of this?
Yeah, good question. The short answer, I guess, is owning the narrative. Like, I would much rather get it out in the open publicly and have like complete control over how the brand is perceived from like day zero. And look, I spent 2 years at NewsQuest. I spent 6 years at Archant. So I know a lot of people at both organizations. So when I made the announcement myself on LinkedIn, like, I know that's hitting like a huge number of staff within that organization.
In an ideal world, you would have stuck to your original plan of going like next week. But is there any silver lining in going a week early, you know, jumping in at the deep end and doing it now?
Yeah, look, I mean, from a purely personal perspective, I've always been someone that operates better under pressure. I'm a dreadful procrastinator. So if I have the opportunity not to do something, then I will probably not do it until I have to. So this has effectively forced my hand and kind of sort of maybe put the sort of rocket burners on. And look, like, it's been like a crazy first day. We've had, at the time of speaking, like over 500 visitors to the site. We've had more than 120 signups to our daily newsletter. We've got more than 60 emails and messages from readers. So look, there's loads of positives in the fact that, look, at this point I thought I'd have zero, and we've got a lot more.
I like the way that you look at that. Like, it's clearly less than ideal for you, but it's not raining on your parade. You've actually had, by the sounds of things, quite a successful first day.
Yeah, look, like, if you'd said to me when we sort of first spoke last week, like, we're going to speak after your first day of launching at switch.co.uk, and you've got like over 100 subscribers, like over 60 local people emailing feedback and well wishes, and you're now actively engaging like with the community, I'd have been like, yeah, amazing. Look, first day, like, job done, big tick in the box.
Did you already have the stories ready to go, or did you have to accelerate those today?
No, I had one story ready to go. So in and amongst all of this chaos, I've still managed to publish 11 stories, and it's been a fairly like active day as well. So we've had a broad mix of stories. We had like a new surgical hub opening at Ipswich Hospital. We've had a fairly high profile murder of a 57-year-old lady. We've had the sentencing of a man jailed for rape, like a local boxing coach, like real good, kind of nice sort of feel good human interest story. Local boxing coach based in Ipswich, lecturer at a local college. He's got a boxer in the Paris Olympics who's sent in this kind of sort of thought provoking, sort of tear jerking postcard. There's been a lot to cover in addition to obviously the craziness of a launch day.
That's a hell of a news day. I mean, 11 stories today. I mean, you personally or your wider team?
No, it's me personally.
I mean, do you have any other journalists and reporters ready to go at this point? What's the size of your team that you're starting with?
Yeah, the size of the team is me. I'm a one-man band. I'm building up a network of freelancers. I'm working with kind of like sort of domain experts. So I've got like a really good data journalist who's doing like an investigation into policing effectiveness in Suffolk, for example. So I'm leaning on other people to kind of do some of the sort of deeper dive kind of journalism while I'm sort of covering the sort of day-to-day news cycle and the kind of curation elements. But yeah, it's me. I'm one person for For now, the plan is to obviously hire, but hiring isn't quick or easy.
So if you head to ipswich.co.uk, which you can all do now, a few things should jump out. It's a very clean website for starters. There are no intrusive paywalls or ads. The latter we are especially used to seeing on local news sites. This is a deliberate move as Oliver, who spent a large chunk of his career in programmatic advertising, feels the economics of online advertising, as it currently is, cannot support local news without creating bad incentives for news content. The site is also so privacy focused, you won't even get a cookie consent banner. There is zero data profiling of users. Whatever Google decides to do next with third-party cookies is totally irrelevant to them. Forget everything you know about local news articles too. Ipswich.co.uk's news articles take direct inspiration from Axios and its smart brevity writing style, which uses subheadings and bullet-pointed information to make it easier for readers to scan for the information they need. But there's a very obvious question next. How on earth is this all sustainable? Not just with the lack of reporters on hand, but where is the money coming from? We go back to my initial interview with Oliver now to talk about his unproven model for local news, funding partners and sponsored sessions that he is quietly confident will work.
There are kind of two parts to our business model at launch. The first are what we call funding partnerships. So there are no advertisers on ipswich.co.uk. Instead, local businesses that share our value and vision for Ipswich will be invited to make an annual contribution towards our journalism. In exchange for that annual contribution, they get access to several services and benefits that are designed to grow their brand, reputation and sales in the community. The second part, the business model, is something that we call sponsored sessions. So just like there are no advertisers on our site, there are also kind of no adverts, at least not in the kind of traditional sense. So instead, when a user visits our website, their entire session is sponsored by one of our funding partners. So if a user lands on our homepage and they read 11 articles or 30 articles over 30 seconds or 30 minutes, they'll only ever see one local business. That business is featured kind of throughout the user journey, but never mid-article. So we only kind of inject like business or brand messaging when a user's at an attention break. So the reading experience remains kind of completely distraction-free. And that for us is like really important because display advertising like detracts value from the reader's experience. Like advertisers are literally paying to make readers enjoy news less. Like, so what we wanted to do is flip that model and find ways where local businesses could actually create value for readers. So in this world, a local reader knows point blank the journalism that they're reading wouldn't be free and accessible without the support of that local business. And all of a sudden, you move away from this kind of like very, very like transactional kind of advertiser-publisher relationship. And most importantly, you remove the link between page views and revenue. And instead, the relationship becomes sessions and revenue. And that was, for me, like our biggest kind of like starting point for our business model, because page views are what drive all of the bad behaviors from publishers, all the clickbait you see, all the overpopulation of ads. Like all of it is driven by the necessity to drive ad impressions. If you remove the necessity to drive ad impressions and instead the necessity is to drive people to become more loyal and visit your site more often and stay longer on the site when they do, you remove the conflict of interest between like editorial and commercial. And that was my starting point. So yeah, time will tell as to whether or not it works, but that was the rationale.
One quick thing on that, and then a bigger question. I mean, so basically page views are out as an incentive really for your editorial, and what's in is going to be loyalty metrics, engagement on site, dwell time, you know, click through to other parts of the website, all of those typical metrics.
Yep, correct. Yeah, we won't even track page views.
You're not going to look at page views at all?
As an independent metric, no. Like, we will include them as part of a set of metrics to understand the types of content that people are interested in. But when it comes to kind of understanding what translates into commercial growth, like, no, they're broadly irrelevant to us.
I think the thing you said on programmatic was interesting too, because I think one thing we've all found as consumers is that the way programmatic often works is you'll be reading an article about one thing and then the ad you see is about something entirely different. And there's this kind of disconnect that feels either uncomfortable or really jarring. And from what you're describing about your business model, it feels a bit more either bespoke or handpicked in some way that you're choosing your partners and trying to align the two more closely. Have I got that right?
Yeah, look, 100%. It's a massive gamble for us. Like, I'm effectively removing the only guaranteed revenue stream in terms of programmatic advertising from launch. And at the same time, I'm probably wiping out like 50% of our potential advertiser base by being incredibly selective about the types of businesses that we work with. So those two things combined create an incredible kind of challenge, which kind of, I guess, time will tell as to kind of how that works out. But yeah, look, it's that's the kind of reality.
You seem really calm about this. Are you confident this is going to work?
Yeah, I think part of that is probably my nature. It's also like, while I guess kind of making it happen is kind of a new thing, like, I've been kind of living and breathing these ideas for the last 10 years. And like, yeah, look, I am confident that it works. Like, what I'm not confident about is the level at which it can work to. Like, do I think that I can build a sustainable local newsroom in Ipswich that breaks even and does a good job of serving the community? Yeah, 100%. Do I think that I can do that and also pay myself a salary that even comes close to what I could earn if I was working for a large corporate? That's the bit that I'm not so sure about. And that, again, was like a massive kind of part of how I sort of thought about this business. I actually turned down the opportunity 2 years ago to raise like a much larger amount of funding to start this business, because I don't fundamentally believe that you can build a sustainable local newsroom in a place like Ipswich for as long as you have to drive a large exit event for shareholders. Like, those two things, they don't play nicely together. And like, the reality is there are lots of local newsrooms around the country that are owned by big corporates that are sustainable. They are breaking even. They just don't generate enough profit and enough growth for them to be deemed viable from large publicly owned or shareholder backed media businesses. So again, like, one of my sort of like founding principles was I wouldn't go and raise like traditional like equity investment for this business. I've raised it from one person who I know very well, who shares my kind of own views and beliefs and vision for local media in this industry.
There's an obvious question that we kind of do need to pick up on, which is the fact that your domain name is ipswich.co.uk, right? As far as generic domain names go, that's nearly as generic as ours at journalism.co.uk. So you said that you paid a lot for this domain name. How much did the domain name cost you? Can you tell me?
Yeah, it cost the two domains, so ipswich.co.uk and ipswichtown.co.uk, cost £25,000 combined. So it was a big upfront investment, and it was somewhat impulsive. I had various other domain names lined up to use, but yeah, when the chance to buy it sort of arose, I kind of couldn't really turn it down.
Why did you deem that such an important investment?
Brand. So brand for me is incredibly important, and I don't underestimate just how big a challenge that is. The starting point is that there is within Ipswich like huge levels of dissatisfaction amongst readers around the existing publications that they have access to. But despite that, it's actually very, very difficult, in my view, to establish a new media brand in any market. Like, you're fighting against 150 years of brand history and habit. Changing habits isn't a quick or easy process, no matter how much better you believe your product is. So, like, I didn't want our focus to be on like selling news. Like, my focus is on selling a better Ipswich. I don't think the media business alone will make this a long-term, sustainable, profitable business. I think it's the most important part, but I want to diversify into very kind of like non-traditional revenue streams in order to effectively own as much of the kind of like Ipswich market as possible. And that, by doing that, you create levels of revenue that you're able to then reinvest in local journalism. So I didn't want something that was very, very like media centric, like the Ipswich Times or the Ipswich Courier, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted it to be broader than that.
Why is the brand appeal worth £25,000 to you?
So initially, it obviously isn't. Long term, I think it holds huge value. Like, if, let's just say, kind of worst case happens and in 3 years' time, like the kind of experiment fails, but we still have like a break-even sustainable website generating good quality news content. Like that combined with a really solid domain that over the kind of years has built up kind of authority, still has value. Like it's an asset. Like I see that domain name as an asset that can't depreciate in value. It can only appreciate in value given the investment that's going into it. So that's the kind of sort of like the negative kind of part. The positive part is that that domain is the platform in which everything I want to do in Ipswich will be built on top of. And that's worth five times the amount to me. If I have, like, I don't know, the ipswichcitizen.co.uk, like, I can't use that as a foundation to build, like, physical spaces in the town centre or events or whatever it is that I deem as, like, a part of this business in the future. So I wanted something that had, like, longevity and the ability to scale, and ipswich.co.uk does that. Like, it's a statement of intent. Like, this business is for Ipswich, and as such, like, we've gone and acquired the one domain that can reflect that in isolation. It may be an entirely stupid decision, by the way, and I may regret it, but that at least is my own internal kind of rationalisation.
If you are wrong, and I don't want to be too much of a downer on this, I mean, how open are you to changing the model and, you know, changing your course of direction?
Yeah, very open. Look, I'm not going to do like a, like BuzzFeed were famous for it, right? Like they came out and they told everyone that display advertising was dead, like it's killing the industry and it's like the worst thing that's ever happened in humanity. And then a few years later, when they're under pressure to, you know, find a profitable model, they launched advertising. So look, like, I'll never rule anything out, and I'm always going to be open to being wrong. You have to be. Like I'm basically doing the opposite of what every single local publisher and arguably every publisher in the country is doing, and the hope that some of those things work and pay off. Like, there is a chance that everyone else has got it right and I've got it wrong, and that I'm being overly ambitious. And if that's the case, look, that's fine. Look, I'll happily backtrack and find other ways. I'm going into this kind of optimistic but realistic at the same time.
So wishing you all the best with it, Ollie. Thanks so much for chatting to me, and all the best from here.
Yeah, really appreciate it, Jacob, and likewise. Take care.
And this certainly is a statement of intent. But one takeaway for today is definitely to be the change you want to see. Oliver's take on local news might work, it might not work, but one thing you can't fault is the determination to put his money where his mouth is and try something different, rather than just staying with the status quo or complaining about the same industry issues. I love inspirational stories like this one, so if you have one of your own, I'd love to hear it. Find me on LinkedIn, Twitter/X at JPGJournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.